Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, giving the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank with no VIG or sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Create an account and use code PGF for $10 on your first order. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk football. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Got a great show. We're going to talk about NFL players who didn't get contract extensions, pass rush versus coverage. Which one is more important? Sean Payton could be coaching again soon, and much more with guest Dalton Miller of Pro Football Network. So let's crack a cold one and kick this off. Excited to be joined by Dalton Miller, who's the lead football analyst for Pro Football Network. Dalton, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Excited to jump into some NFL offseason here with you. I want to start with Lamar Jackson. His lack of a contract extension continues. Jackson and the Ravens haven't reached an agreement on a contract. He enters his fifth season with the team. To me, Dalton, this is one of the most interesting stories in the NFL right now. What do you make of this story? And do you think they're going to get a deal done before training camp?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if they get a deal done before training camp happens, but I do think a deal ends up getting done. Now, if I'm Lamar Jackson and I play the way that I play, you know, very active, getting out, trying to be a playmaker, taking hits, I'm trying to get as much guaranteed money as possible up front for the future. These contracts are incredibly difficult to navigate. And without having an actual agent, these things are a lot more difficult. Now, obviously, his mother is part of a team that is you know, handling all of this for him. But when you're talking about, you know, close to $40 million a year, if not more than $40 million a year, and well over $100 million in guaranteed money, it's very difficult to navigate those waters without paid professionals that, you know, to have your back.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've touched on it. Him basically representing himself without an agent. I know his mother, like you said, is involved as well. The guaranteed money, I think, could be a hang up here for this contract extension. Do you think the Deshaun Watson deal and the huge amount of guaranteed money that he received recently, do you think that's part of what this issue could be or the holdup could be?
That's a good question. I don't think so, just because we had already seen issues with Lamar and the Baltimore Ravens before all of this Deshaun stuff was happening. I mean, we've seen other quarterbacks, you know, around that time get their deals already. And then you do have the massive, fully guaranteed deal for Deshaun Watson going to Cleveland, which was mind-boggling at the time and is still very crazy to think about, you know, when we are discussing all of the off-field question marks that he brings. And the question marks with Lamar Jackson aren't off the field per se, but, you know, his ability to remain healthy and to continue his high level of play with his style of play. Is he going to continue to develop as a passer, somebody who is going to be able to win consistently from the pocket without going and, you know, making plays with his feet? You know, once he gets a little bit less athletic, whether it be due to age or injury, what is that play level going to look like? Is he going to be able to sustain it? And, you know, over the past couple of seasons, his play has kind of dwindled down a little bit. That team has kind of diminished around him. And then obviously last year, everybody on the Baltimore Ravens got hurt. So it is difficult to really get a good feel for, you know, what kind of quarterback he is going to be in the long-term future. But we've already seen him be the most electric player in the NFL, winning an MVP in his second NFL season. And we've seen him survive and thrive passing from the pocket in the past. but it was when he had a decent offensive line that was able to pass protect for him and a couple of weapons, particularly on the inside with a couple of tight ends. And now Mark Andrews is one of the best in the league. I think last year, guys were getting hurt. He didn't have the protection around him. And he was just simply trying to do too much. So that kind of, you know, led to injuries, taking unnecessary hits. So it'll be interesting to see how he's able to kind of, you know, quell those concerns this year. And I think then after this season is where the Ravens and Lamar Jackson end up getting a deal done. I don't know if it happens before the season.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I like what you said about the long-term, looking at the long-term picture with him because of his playmaking ability with his legs, how much that sets up things for him and how much value it adds to him as a player, how that plays out, like you said, with age and injury, how good will he be in 5-7 years and how long-term of a deal Baltimore Ravens want to go with here. Speaking of deals here, Dalton, we saw some pretty high-level players not sign extensions. Cowboys tight end Dalton Schultz, Dolphins tight end Mike Gesicki, Chiefs tackle Orlando Brown, and Bengals safety Jesse Bates. How surprised were you that these players didn't reach a deal with their teams?
When we're talking about Dalton Schultz and Jesse Bates, I'm not surprised at all. With Schultz, the Cowboys are already paying a ton of offensive members quite a bit of money. And so it wasn't crazy to think that they weren't going to get a long-term deal done with him. And I don't think they are going to get a long-term deal done with him. I think he will be gone after this season, which is going to be a hit for Dak Prescott, especially because he is somebody who really likes to work over the middle of the field. And Dalton Schultz has improved drastically from his time at Stanford as a receiver. He kind of came into the NFL as somebody who we believed was going to be, you know, a blocker and could, you know, be an outlet every once in a while. And he's really turned into a well-rounded route runner, somebody who can separate over the middle and run a full route tree. But at the end of the day, with the Cowboys paying so many other players, I just don't think they are going to prioritize him. They just paid Michael Gallup, who they expect to come back, you know, fully healthy eventually. They're going to pay CeeDee Lamb as well. They just drafted another wide receiver as well. And then they drafted a tight end very early as well. So I think that they're probably going to end up moving on unless they aren't going to see the progression that they want to out of those tight ends. They might end up tagging him again. And then with Jesse Bates, the Bengals just don't pay people. I mean, it's just the way that it is. They'll pay Joe Burrow, obviously. But a lot of players, they just, they're tight pocketed. The Cincinnati Bengals always have been. They are a very small front office. They are very much a homegrown type of operation. And I don't think they just don't want to spend all of that money, even though we just saw them go out and overperform, in my opinion. Not that they weren't a great team last year, but I didn't think that they were the best team in the AFC. And they ended up, you know, going and being the AFC contender in the Super Bowl. So they have more expectations now. They have a better roster now because they improved the offensive line. I think they just try to ride this out with Jesse Bates this year. And then I think Jesse Bates moves on as well. Mike Gesicki one's interesting because with the move to Mike McDaniel and having a big weapon on the outside like that, it'll be interesting because that's an offense that is going to want to really work off of yards after the catch. And Mike Gesicki is somebody who catches absolutely everything that is thrown his way. He's got a great wingspan, and everything that touches his hands, it ends up in his chest. He finishes catches. But I don't know if he is going to be the archetype of tight end that Mike McDaniel wants in that offense. So it'll be interesting to see if he is a proponent of trying to keep him after this year, or if they just want to move on and go with somebody who is a little bit more of an all-around tight end, somebody who can be in line more often and can block a little bit. Obviously, you're not going to get George Kittle in Miami, but you can get something, you know, for 40% of the price and give you 75% of the production as a blocker in that case. So I think that that's probably the direction that they go. Although I would like to see Gesicki stay because I think that he can really be an outlet for somebody like Tua. You have those speedy weapons on the outside, but you would really like that that really high efficiency throw it up, and that 6'7" dude is going to go up and get it. And I think that that is something that Gesicki brings to that offense they don't really have elsewhere.
Yeah, I think you hit that on the head perfectly, because you're right. The Bengals, you put it nicely, but I'll just say it like it is. They're cheap.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's how they've been for years. So you're right. It doesn't completely surprise me. Plus, they drafted a safety early in the draft. I think they're already looking for his replacement. It's a little surprising in the sense that, like you said, they became an AFC contender. Even if it was a bit of a Cinderella ride, they're a team that clearly is moving in the right direction. And to lose a guy like him, I think, is definitely an interesting move. But Dalton Schultz, I think you hit that perfectly too. There's just too much money being spread out in Dallas to keep him around. Gesicki is really fascinating, though, because this is a really underrated player, I think, from a national perspective. A really good player that I think could be a building block for them, and it was interesting to see they didn't get a deal done. So I loved your takes there on those guys. Now, you wrote an article on Pro Football Network recently about pass rush versus coverage. I found it to be really interesting and informative. Tell us about this article and what you discovered when writing it.
That I argue with myself a lot. I went into it with the goal of trying to prove pass rush, or trying to prove coverage over pass rush incorrect. I wanted to find that pass rush as a unit and as an entity in and of itself is more valuable than coverage. The issue that I came down to is that, yes, if you are able to get home with four, it can negatively affect the opposing quarterback greatly. We saw that with the San Francisco 49ers as they were rolling into the playoffs, consistently getting pressure on Dak Prescott and then Aaron Rodgers. And even before that, in the back half of the season, that defensive line was getting home at a ridiculous rate. But even the best teams in the NFL get home 30% of the time, or pressure the quarterback on 30% of dropbacks. The highest in the past 6 or 7 years are the Pittsburgh Steelers at 35, and there's only been four teams over the past four seasons that have had a 30% pressure rate overall. So you're looking at 7 out of 10 dropbacks having to cover, and that is incredibly important. And we've also seen that just forcing the ball out quickly doesn't necessarily or inherently make it better for the defense, because we've seen that when quarterbacks get the ball out quicker, it is usually within the scheme of the offense, getting the ball out quickly to open receivers and being able to have a little bit higher EPA per play on those plays where they are getting the ball out in under 2.5 seconds compared to over 2.5 seconds. In layman's term, the risk reward of holding on to the ball and trying to make a play downfield, risk factor there is too great to consistently try to do that, which is why, you know, we've seen ADOT come down year in and year out. We've seen the quarterbacks getting the ball out quicker and quicker. We've seen far less 7-step drops by NFL quarterbacks. We are seeing far quicker passes, a lot more stuff behind the line of scrimmage. And it is because we are trying to make the passing attack as efficient as possible. We've seen over the past years, we've seen completion percentages skyrocket. And a lot of that has to do with just the rules of the NFL. It has made it so that it is difficult to cover. And so you look at all that and you're like, man, well, if it's so hard to cover, it really doesn't matter. I mean, why don't you just go out and try to get to the quarterback as quick as possible? Well, when you look at defensive outcomes, when you cover better, you do better. And that's something that I was kind of surprised at. I figured that the teams that were better pass rushing than with coverage would end up, you know, or it would go together a little bit better, I should say. But the correlation isn't really there. And we've seen teams have better outcomes when they are better in coverage than they are at just pass rushing. And two great examples of that just from last season were the Philadelphia Eagles and the Las Vegas Raiders. Both had over 40% pass rush win rates by ESPN's measures. Both were in the top 10 there. Neither had a top 15 defense last season. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people kind of clap back and say, hey, well, yeah, well, the Eagles only had 29 sacks. They were, you know, bottom third in the league in sacks. But sacks are just one statistic when it comes to the pass rush coverage debate. So when you're looking at it, and you look at pressure, pressure is what affects a quarterback and what affects an offense overall in the passing attack. It's not just sacks. It is the entire picture. And that's why guys like Robert Quinn, who, you know, consistently have low pressure numbers year in and year out outside of his 19 and a half sack season when he had, I believe, you know, like 75 pressures. He's been a low pressure, high sack guy every couple of years. And that's why he's been so inconsistent. And that's the thing that when you're talking about a team building perspective goes to the individual when it comes to the pass rush versus coverage debate. There's a reason why NFL teams pay pass rushers and not secondary members. But that, again, does not make pass rush more important than coverage. It is more consistent on a year-to-year basis, and that is why you pay pass rushers, because you know year in and year out, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, the Bosa brothers, Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, now Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, those guys are going to produce year in and year out. But when you look at who the best quarterback or cornerbacks have been over the past couple of seasons, you have 4, 5, 6, 7 different names, and guys fall off very quickly at that position. It is such a reactionary position that it is just difficult to continuously remain good at it. And that is why guys like Jalen Ramsey, who, you know, for my money is the best cornerback in the NFL, has stayed at the top. It's because he has been so consistently good throughout the years. Marlon Humphrey, for what he is asked to do in that Baltimore defense with Wink Martindale, was one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL for a long, 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 long time. He still is. And that is with getting beat for about 250 yards against the Cincinnati Bengals in week 7. And again, that just goes to show how difficult that position is. But that's why those guys don't get paid as much. It's because that projection or that production is so scattered year in and year out. We've seen Marshon Lattimore, who is one of the most supremely talented defensive backs in the NFL, have bad seasons, even though those Saints defenses have been top 5 for the past 10 years almost. They've been one of the most consistent defenses outside of the Baltimore Ravens in the past 5 years for sure. So it's an interesting debate, and I think it's a debate that'll continue to happen just because the game is continuously evolving. But my conclusion at the end of the day was that as a unit, coverage is more important, but you pay pass rushers. I think that you also pay safeties, which is something that the NFL is starting to do a little bit, and or I should say they're at least starting to value that position a little bit more. And then you throw darts in the draft, high darts, first round picks, second round picks, third round picks on cornerbacks. You might give one a second deal. Don't give a cornerback a big third deal. Don't let them hit 30 and then be trying to give them a deal. But overall, I think that your best bet is to pay those pass rushers. It's an interesting debate. It'll never stop. I think on the individual level, like I said, pass rushers are more important. But as a unit, the coverage is game.
Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank. Better Edge is available in 45 states. For real money sports betting, play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating topic. The amount of research and time that went into this article was evident. It was really, really well done by you. It was a fascinating read. Guys, make sure you go check it out on Pro Football Network. Now, you also wrote an article on Pro Football Network about Sean Payton and his retirement that could be short-lived. What are you hearing about Payton, and where and when could he be coaching next?
That's a really interesting one, because the big one has been the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins were, I think, kind of informally in talks with Sean Payton, and then that kind of broke down. They were going to give him a ton of money. I don't see him back in 2023. I think that when you're looking at the teams that he would want to go to, and listen, Sean Payton has earned the right to be incredibly picky about if he wants to come out of retirement or not. So we've already seen the teams he's kind of looking at, contending teams. So Miami, Dallas, the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, the Chargers would have to kind of implode for them to fire Brandon Staley going into year 3. That doesn't make a ton of sense. It makes absolutely no sense for the Miami Dolphins, no matter what happens this season, to fire Mike McDaniel. And I say that because that would give Tua Tagovailoa his 5th offensive coordinator in 4 years. That is ridiculous. You do not do that with a young quarterback. You need continuity. And for as good of an offensive coach as Sean Payton is, I think that you are consistently putting your quarterback behind the eight ball when you continuously change the offense that is going on around him. And then with the Cowboys, it's more of a fairy tale type deal when it comes to Sean Payton and the Cowboys. And I say that because back in the day, Sean Payton was the next Cowboys coach, but he was behind Bill Parcells. And Bill Parcells, obviously a legend. So he goes on to coach the New Orleans Saints. And then they obviously, the Cowboys end up hiring Wade Phillips and then hiring Jason Garrett after that. But that was the one, and Jerry Jones has talked about this a lot, that Sean Payton is kind of the one that got away from him. And that kind of eats at him a little bit, that Payton went away when they had high hopes for him. And obviously he went on to win a Super Bowl and become a legend in New Orleans. But I think that that's more of a pipe dream than anything else. I actually think that if things go like they did last year, you see the Dallas Cowboys, you know, make the first round of the playoffs and then get bounced. I actually think that it's going to be Dan Quinn's job in 2023 as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys before it would be Sean Payton. I think one just out of the blue one to look for is if the Arizona Cardinals implode this year, because I think that they overachieved last year. That defense was not very good, but had very good production. And I say that as a team that just doesn't have a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball, especially in the secondary. And their tape was surprisingly bad in the secondary as well. And they still went out and had good production. So it was a weird year for the Arizona Cardinals. And they looked really good early on and kind of imploded. Kyler didn't play well down the stretch after the ankle injury. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with them this year. If they implode, that could be another stop for Sean Payton, because we know he wants warm weather and he wants a contender. And I think that when you look at Kyler Murray and the potential of Kyler Murray, I think that that would be an intriguing option for Sean Payton. But I don't think outside of that option, I don't think Miami makes sense for 2023. I don't think Dallas does. And I don't think that the Chargers do either.
Yeah, that's interesting. The Chargers would be, I think, the most exciting from a fan standpoint with Justin Herbert. It would be amazing to see what he could do there. I think there's a lot of question marks about Staley, but I think you're right. It would be a little quick to move off of him unless, like you said, unless they absolutely just implode this year. Payton to the Cardinals is one that I hadn't given much thought to. That would be really interesting. I would love to see what he could do offensively with that team, with Kyler Murray and some of the weapons they have. And Quinn as the next head coach in Dallas, that's one that I think a lot of people might not have thought of coming in, but I think we know Mike McCarthy's seat is starting to heat up, and that wouldn't surprise me at all either. So I thought that was a great take by you. I want to shift into some predictions, so to speak. Which AFC team and which NFC team do you think is going to surprise people this year?
That is a good question. The AFC is a tough one because I think if it's one team for me, I think it would be the Indianapolis Colts having a good season. I think that when you look at the quarterback situation, Matt Ryan, I think got a little bit of flack last year, but I think he was still really good behind a terrible situation in Atlanta. So I think he's going to give them a little bit more stability on offense. And that's really all that they need. They don't need a ton of explosiveness on that offense. They've never really dealt with that since the Andrew Luck days, kind of gone to a quick passing attack. And that's something that I think Matt Ryan is going to be able to excel in. And so in the AFC, I think that it's them. And in the NFC, it's kind of tough just because I don't think that the NFC is very strong in general. I think Philadelphia is kind of everybody's darlings right now. But when I'm looking at the rest of, you know, the conference, I keep going back to New Orleans, man. That defense, like I said, it just continues to remain good. And I think until that defense starts to fall off, if they are able to, you know, keep Jameis Winston healthy, they were 5-2 last year. When he was healthy, he was playing well. They weren't putting a lot on his plate. They were running the ball way too much, in my opinion, and that was a very weird sighting from a Sean Payton-led offense. But I think put the ball in his hands a little bit. He can see now. He got LASIK. He looked way better last year. Give him a couple more opportunities. Stop just turning and handing the ball off to Alvin Kamara in adverse situations and forcing his efficiency down the tank because he had his worst season as a pro. And I think that could be a surprising team in the NFC.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on the Colts. I think that's a team that not enough people are talking about, and you hit on it perfectly. Bringing in a guy like Matt Ryan, who, yeah, he might not be the MVP level Matt Ryan from a few years ago, but a guy that I think can still play at a pretty high level. And when you put him in with that great offensive line to protect him, he's got a strong running game, a good defense. He's going to have the pieces around him, I think, to have a lot of success. And in a deep AFC, it's tough to see them as a contender, so to speak, but I do think they're a team that can make some noise and surprise some people, certainly just having that stability at quarterback. Carson Wentz was just such a roller coaster ride last year. I think with Matt Ryan, that stability is going to be a huge factor for them. The Saints in the NFC is interesting. This is a team that I can't quite put my thumb on. I'm not really sure what to expect from them. You're definitely right about the defense. I think that alone is going to keep them in a lot of games. I do have question marks about the head coach. And Jameis Winston has been a bit of a roller coaster himself as far as his career. So he did play really well in what we saw last year. Like you said, that 5-2 record, he was starting to play pretty well in that offense. So it'll be kind of interesting to see where that team goes this year, but it wouldn't surprise me as well if they were maybe a little better than people expected. Now, we saw a lot of big name players move this offseason, a lot of big splashy headlines, but which one do you think is most likely to underwhelm?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, taking Deshaun Watson off the table just because his underwhelming would be just simply from not playing. Let's go with Allen Robinson in LA. And I don't say that from a, you know, like talent perspective or anything like that. I just think that in that offense, it's the first time we've seen a receiver of Allen Robinson's ilk in that offense. So I'm just not quite sure how that's going to fit. They've went with, you know, a lot more speed. You know, they've had Robert Woods. They have Van Jefferson, who is, you know, more the route running type. Allen Robinson's kind of the first like X, traditional X type of receiver, you know, big body type of guy. And we know that Matthew Stafford is able to work with a guy like that. I just wonder how it's going to work within the offense, especially because he's not going to be the first target. And he might not even be, you know, the second target in that offense, depending on what happens. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I don't think that it'll be a huge disappointment from, you know, like a team perspective. But I think when we look at him from, you know, more of a fantasy perspective, I don't know how much I love that fit.
Yeah, Allen Robinson, that's interesting. That's a great answer. I think Allen Robinson in LA, I think a lot of people just kind of assume that when McVay gets a new weapon that it's automatically going to work. But I like what you said about the fit and does it fit? So I think that's a great answer by you. Now, we talked about big names moving teams, but what are some under the radar moves that teams made this offseason that you think could make an impact this year?
Man, I love, and it's not like super under the radar, but I think with everything else that happened in free agency and just the way that it shook out, I don't know if we're talking about Hassan Reddick to Philadelphia enough. I mean, he's obviously a fantastic player, somebody who played, you know, off the ball linebacker for his first couple of seasons in Arizona. They love to draft those tweener players and then put them at the wrong position. He did that, and then he was finally a pass rusher out of necessity because Chandler Jones got hurt, and he came in and played really well, went to Carolina, played really well in Carolina, and now he's up in Philadelphia, and he's going to do the same thing in Philly. Might not be, you know, super underrated because he's still kind of a big name, but I do think that that's one that, from a national side, I don't think that that's a fit that is getting enough coverage.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Hassan Reddick to the Eagles, he's really been a guy that's been undervalued from a national narrative perspective, a guy that doesn't get talked about enough. And I think that's a great answer because he's a guy that I think also fits a need for them. So that'll be an interesting one to see what he does there in Philly. Now, I've asked this question with some recent guests. I love the variety of answers I've gotten. Who's the most overhyped team going into 2022?
That's a great question. Overhyped. I'm going to go with Denver. I'll go with Denver. I think that we've seen, you know, some ups and downs from Russell Wilson over the past couple of seasons. I think that he's played really, really well at times. And then, you know, the injury has set him back a little bit here and there. I think that he hasn't really played behind a fantastic offensive line in his entire career. But I think that that offensive line in Denver has underwhelmed, you know, at least last year, it underwhelmed with Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that all works out, you know, especially in a division that is going to be as difficult as that division is. I would love to say the Chargers, just because I think that the Chargers are, you know, kind of perpetually overrated because they are such an aesthetically pleasing team, you know, with the colors being out in Southern California. But I do think that that roster now is ready to compete at the highest level. And not that I don't think Denver has the talent for it. I just want to wait and see how it all meshes together with a first-year head coach, with some, you know, kind of high-risk, you know, free agency guys. I love Randy Gregory to death, but he has to stay on the field. Bradley Chubb has had issues staying on the field as well. Their inside linebackers are not good, and they need a little bit of help at cornerback as well. Obviously, Patrick Surtain might end up being a top five guy, but I do think that is a team that is being overhyped just because they made some big deals in the offseason.
Yeah, that is a great answer. That's a team that I'm definitely circling as well. Denver, like you said, this is a team on paper, looks really dangerous, looks like a team that can make some noise, and they might. Don't get me wrong, they definitely might, but you hit on some points, and with Russell Wilson, I think he might be closer to the back nine of his career than people realize, and it feels like maybe he's lost just a step. The mobility has always played a big role in his success. Plus, like you touched on, you got a new head coach there, so there's some moving parts. Randy Gregory is a great point. He's a guy that we've seen the talent, but is the consistency going to be there from him? So that is a team that's interesting because I think Denver fans and a lot of people are thinking that this could be a Super Bowl team. And they certainly might be, but they also could be a team that flat out missed the playoffs and really surprised some people in that regard. So I love that answer, and I absolutely loved having Dalton Miller on the show today. Once again, he's the lead football analyst for Pro Football Network. Go check out his stuff at profootballnetwork.com. Always great to read what you're doing over there. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute blast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That is going to do it for today's episode presented by Better Edge. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on new episodes, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.